on clearing the clutter inside and out, we're talking about the psychology of stuff. How does your relationship with stuff as a child affect you currently? Can your brain be affecting whether or not you're holding on to things? Do we tend to collect more or release more as we age? Learn more about the psychology of stuff and tips to reduce your belongings as we end our month focusing on hodgepodge.
Ready to clear your clutter and share your gifts with the world? Every Tuesday at 1 p.m., join award-winning professional organizer, author, and certified life coach Julie Caraccio on Clearing the Clutter Inside and Out as she teaches you how to navigate the waters to declutter your life. Julie Caraccio destroys the box and examines clutter in all areas.
Today's episode was inspired. This had been on my list to talk about the psychology of stuff for a while. And this month, if you've listened to all the podcasts and the interview with Teresa, I started working with her and a little more scientific stuff. She called it reprogramming the brain. I would call it rewiring, and just made me want to explore that a little more, find out some more information. I also have to share a little funny note. So I record these episodes over a few days, and I'd recorded one and then went and saw Teresa, and I was kind of cracking up because I was telling her, you know, I was talking about the neighbors and the trash, and as I'm recording it, I can feel myself getting agitated and annoyed, and I said, I don't want to waste my time on dumb stuff like that. So I just kind of had to chuckle because the podcast serves me as well, and hopefully it's serving you and supporting you, but I do pay attention, and I was laughing as I'm recording. I'm thinking, oh, this really is something, and made a mental note, you know, you need to work with to kind of what's going on here. My hope with this subject for today's podcast is this might support a lot of people and put it in a context for that aha moment. However, I'd like to be very clear on this. It's not an excuse. It's to help with awareness, but not to be like, oh, my brain, maybe collect the clutter. That is the exact opposite of what I'd like to happen. Sometimes our possessions become extensions of the self. I ran into this trap, actually, with what I did. When I finished my show, Reawaken Your Brilliance, I felt this hole because such a big part of my life and a part of my identity was doing the show. The same thing can happen with our stuff. We might use our possessions to show others, as well as ourselves, who we want to be, and where we want to belong, and perhaps as our legacy. Some people might even say our essence lives on in what we once owned or made. Evolutionary psychology has shown that humans share the same inner need for stuff, a sense of self. So it's not surprising that psychological studies of our love-hate relationship with it have increased exponentially since the industrial age vastly expanded global access to consumer goods. This information is from an article from The Psychologist Online in the UK. A study by Ori Friedman and Karen Neary in 2008 showed that between the ages 2 and 4, kids make the assumption that whoever is first in possession of the object is the owner, regardless of whether they later gave it away. Kids get that they can own something by age 2, although it's not as complex as adults do. But I was fascinated by that. It's been a while. My nieces and nephew are older, and I can still remember my toy, you know, even when they were younger. So it was fascinating to me that early on we get it about possessions. Ownership can create envy. Kids learn they'd like to have another child's toy, or they might feel it isn't just when they have to share with another. In Jean Piaget's 1932 book, The Moral Judgment of the Child, observed that even babies express jealousy over objects, giving signs of violent rage, and that's in quotations, when a toy is taken from them and given to another. Bachelik and her colleagues in 2018 filmed 22-month-olds playing with their peers in daycare. Nearly a quarter of all sources of conflict were over possessions, where the child either defended his or her objects from another child or wanted to take the object away from another child. So early on, we're kind of wired. Again, not as an excuse. This is for the aha moment. Most kids experience an intense relationship with an attachment object like Blankie. Studies show that many didn't want their special object copied or taking a non-original home. It's as if the kids believe their special object had a unique essence, a form of magical thinking that reappears in adulthood in our treatment of heirlooms, celebrity memorabilia, and artwork. I thought that was very interesting and a great connection that they made. So think about that. Are you that way with your heirlooms? Are you someone who collects celebrity memorabilia? How do you feel about your artwork? As children mature into teens, we see possessions starting to act as a crutch for the self. In 2007, Lan Chaplin and her colleagues interviewed participants between the ages of 8 and 18 and found that materialism peaked at middle adolescence, just when self-esteem tended to be the lowest. Looking back on my life, oh gosh, junior high, ugh. But that's probably where it was most important for me to have quote-unquote designer labels. It couldn't be a no-name. It had to be a name, and I'm not like that now, and I really wasn't like that in high school, maybe a little bit, but I would say it was more intense for me in the junior high age. In a follow-up, materialism was reduced in teens who were given flattering feedback from peers to boost their self-esteem. The researchers said, giving children or adolescents a sense of self-worth and accomplishment seems to be quite an effective antidote to the development of materialism. I agree with that, and I agree that that supports adults too. That if you are challenged, have some reflection. If you know, I say all the time, I believe we can reduce whatever's going on to feeling not good enough, not worthy enough, or love. In the transition from adolescence to adulthood, it's the first card that often becomes the ultimate symbol of a person's emerging identity. In adulthood, as our lives unfold, our things embody our sense of selfhood and identity still further, becoming external receptacles for our memories, relationships, and travels. How much we see our things as an extension of ourselves may depend on how confident we feel about who we are. When Kimberly Morrison and Camille Johnson led European Americans to feel uncertain about themselves using false feedback on a personality questionnaire, for example, the consistency of your responses isn't high enough to construct a clear picture of who you are, they responded by rating their belongings as particularly self-expressive, as saying something about who they are. In a follow-up, those participants scoring highly in individualism, as opposed to collectivism, who wrote about an object that reflected their self-concept, subsequently scored particularly high on a measure of self-certainty. It's as if reflecting on our things restores a fragile ego. Think about that for a moment. Is there a possession that you feel represents you or has your heart and soul and that you would be devastated if you were to lose it? The results could help explain some of the behavior we associate with the midlife crisis, such as when a man having a midlife crisis finds a new Porsche. A related line of research by Derek Rucker and Adam Galinsky at the Kellogg School of Management showed that participants who felt powerless were more willing to pay for a silk tie and other high-status products. From a neural perspective, the absorption of objects into self-identity may be more than a mere metaphor. In 2010, Kiyomi Kim and Marcia Johnson scanned participants' brains as they allocated objects to a container marked as mine, imaging that they are going to own them, or to a container marked with someone else's name. Extra activity was observed in the medial prefrontal cortex in response to the sight of owned items compared with control items allocated to others. The same area was activated when participants rated how much various adjectives describe their own personalities. Kim said, areas of the brain that are known to be involved in thinking about the self also appear to be involved when we create associations between external things and ourselves through ownership. Signals. As well as shoring up our sense of identity, our possessions also allow us to signal something about ourselves to other people. For example, in a romantic context, there's evidence for men using the purchase of showy items, in other words, conspicuous consumption, as a display of status and availability to women. Conspicuous consumption can also convey status and importance outside of romantic relationships.
Anxious, exhausted, stressed out, losing your mind, ready to get your life back? Go to reawakenyourbrilliance.com to learn how Julie Caraccio can support you.
A study at Tilburg University showed that people wearing a luxury brand shirt, such as Tommy Hilfiger, were perceived as wealthier and higher status than people wearing a non-brand or non-luxury shirt. More successful at getting passerbys to complete a questionnaire, more likely to be given a job, and more successful at soliciting money for a charity, according to Nielsen and Mayers from 2011. Crucially, these effects were only present when it was clear that the wearer of the luxury shirt actually owned that shirt. The researchers found, insofar as luxury displays advertise nothing but wealth or possession in general, the ensuring benefits, particularly financial ones, can be considered perverse. Like a uniform, our possession of specific objects and brands can also signal our membership of social groups, both to others and to ourselves. The success of the Apple brand has been attributed in part to people's desire to show that they belong to a consumer tribe with connotations of coolness. Increasingly, it seems people will do whatever it takes, be that queuing for hours or paying premium prices, in demonstration of their brand loyalty and membership. As our belongings accumulate, becoming more infused with our identities, so their preciousness increases. This is why I say do a purge every single year. If you keep that stuff out, you're less likely to have this happen. People whose things are destroyed in a disaster are traumatized, almost as if they're grieving the loss of their identities. Yet there are many times when people willfully dispose of things. This can often happen at a key juncture, such as moving homes during a divorce, and can be experienced as a chance for a new start. Old belongings are shed, fostering the emergence of a new identity. Later in life, older people don't just form bonds with their specific belongings. They seem to have an affection for brands from their youth. Usually this manifests in taste for music, books, films, and other entertainment from yesteryear. But the same has been shown for fashions and hairstyles. All right, guys, so when I'm in my 70s, you're going to have to check and please make sure I do not have an 80s hairdo. As with human relationships, the attachments to our things deepen with the passage of time. Elderly people are often surrounded by possessions that have followed them through good times and bad, across continents and back. In 2000, Linda Price at the University of Arizona and her colleagues interviewed 80 older people about their decisions regarding these special possessions. A common theme was the way cherished objects come to represent particular memories. Remember, I've talked about this, and I'd encourage you to check out the previous podcast where I specifically talk about memories and how we make the mistake of infusing an object with our memory when we have the memory in our heart and our head. These possessions can be a particular comfort for older people who have had to leave their homes and enter supervised residential care. And remember, you can still take things, but make sure they're the most precious. After a person dies, many of their most meaningful possessions become family heirlooms, seen by those left behind as forever containing the lost person's essence. This idea is also seen in the behaviors that follow the death of a celebrity. In a process that Belt calls sacralization, possessions owned by a deceased star can acquire astonishing value overnight, both sentimental and monetary. I believe when Michael Jackson died, he was in some crazy multi-million dollars of debt, and overnight, everyone wanted to buy things, increased in value. His children benefited from that. How can what happened for you as a child translate into holding onto stuff now? Here are some things to think about. You might not have all the answers you need. For example, I was able to shred a box full of stuff from real estate and accounting. I checked in with experts about that, checked in with the accountant. What can I get rid of? And she's an expert, so I trusted her advice. So if you don't have all the answers you need, is this picture really an antique? Was it really part of the family? Get the answers you need, and that might allow you to release things. Sometimes people feel they need to have the permission to let go of stuff, especially if you had trauma as a child. I've worked with several clients who have held on to things. They've been in boxes for years, and they're afraid to let them go. And sometimes, in one particular case, parents had passed on, and this older client really was like seeing a child again, waiting for permission to be able to do that. What I have always told clients, and I believe truly, when someone passes, they are on to a different life. They have shed their earthly body, they've shed their positions, and they want you to be happy. And they will honor and trust. They will be fine with your decision. They have moved on. Try not to get caught up in the guilt and feeling like you're doing something wrong. And I know that that can be challenging. But that's something I truly believe. They've gone, they've moved on. All this earthly stuff isn't even a thought for them now. Some people just don't know how to get rid of stuff. That's where someone like I come in. Hire a professional organizer. Can read a book. Listen to a podcast. You know, that's why I do those Facebook masterminds. Give you kind of an injection. Get a class. This coaching boom. And then you can do this on your own. I've also seen sometimes where people have borrowed something and held on to it too long and are not sure what to do. I always say the best course of action is just return it. We've seen those stories where they returned a library book 50, 60, 70 years down the road with fine. And if anyone says something, just trust you'll be able to handle it. Most people will be surprised, maybe laugh it off. No one's really going to get bent out of shape. So if you've borrowed something, let it go. Out of sight, out of mind. They can't see it. They don't need to deal with it. That's why, again, I'm such a big fan going through everything you own. I make a list of each item in the room and then take it piece by piece. Do it step by step, and that adds up to getting everything done. I hear this a lot. I might need it someday. And I always tell my clients, trust you will get what you need when you need it. Whatever your faith tradition is, trust you will get what you need when you need it. And as I always view it, I view that and say that someone else needed it more, and I'm going to trust that it's going to get to the person that needs it more than I do. I'm an eco organizer. I completely understand when people don't want to waste. I get that. If it's in good condition, donate it. There are charities out there that are doing lots of good work and that can find a good home for it. Recycle what you can. And what I tell people, if it's just torn and nasty, it just needs to go in the garbage can. Don't give something to someone that you wouldn't give to your own family or a close friend. Sentimentality is another challenge for people on not being able to let stuff go. Again, remember, I'd encourage you to re-listen to that episode on memories, because don't make the mistake of putting the memory into the object. You have your memory in your heart and your head. And again, if someone's passed, trust that they're happier, enjoying life on the other side, and are not worried about their earthly possessions anymore. Someone might be overwhelmed. I get that. That's why my job and line of work exist. If you're overwhelmed, ask for support, whether it's professional or personal. But as I always say, just make sure it's a friend that's not judgmental, because a lot of times people will finally ask for help and then someone does something inadvertently many times, but then it kind of pushes them back even more. Don't know where to begin. You're completely overwhelmed. Where should I begin first? Well, what I always say to people, what's causing you the most stress is one example. I have a couple other, but that's one thing. If something's really stressing you out, like your mortgage needs to be paid, then you need to begin in the office to get that under control. Sometimes people say they're not ready, they're waiting for the right time, but that's just an excuse. There's never going to be a perfect time. You just have to put it on your calendar, write it down, and get started. Not a priority. I just started to mow the lawn. I've been trying to avoid it. First mow of the season, the grass has gotten a little high, I ran out of gas, and I was talking to my neighbor. I have an elderly neighbor, and I said, you know what, it's just not a priority right now. It'll get done within the next week. I'm not going to sweat it, because I know what's important.
Started to organize and got stuck? Need questions answered or customized solutions? Looking for a professional organizer to bounce ideas? Go to reawakenyourbrilliance.com to learn how Julie Caraccio can help.
That's okay, but if it continues not to be a priority, then you need to have some accountability. You don't want it, if your home hasn't been cleared in 20, 35, 10 years, then that's a problem. You need to be able to go through things. So you need to figure out how to motivate yourself to make it a priority. And then finally, a fear of letting go. But remember, fear is false evidence appearing real. I have a little affirmation that I say, that I've been saying, I started yesterday. I release and let go of all that doesn't serve me. And that, again, ties back into trust. Trust that you'll get what you need when you need it. A lot of times our minds, our egos, our mental bodies create all these crazy fears that aren't real. So that's when the time to step back, take a deep breath. What's going on here? How can I flip this? And then ask for support and trust. How can you reverse the psychology of stuff? I encourage people, start having experiences for birthdays, anniversary, Valentine's Day, instead of collecting more stuff. That's something you can become aware of, and you can consciously choose rather have an experience than get a tchotchke that I'm going to have to dust later. Collect memories. For example, when I travel, I always get a painting from where I travel. There's a lot of great street art right there, and it is a great memory. It puts something nice on my desk or on the walls, and it makes me happy to see that. So if I'm going to get something, it's something that brings me joy and that it adds to my house, it adds to my fulfillment. And it's not just something that has no random meaning, just like collecting Beanie Babies or something like that. Live in the present. In other words, ditch the dress you can't fit into. And that's hard, ladies, I know. Two of my most challenging areas are books and my closet. I did a really great job. I'm really proud of myself for letting some stuff go. It was a challenge because it was really nice, but I'm never probably going to be that size ever again. Retrain your brain. Check out the Psyche interview. Check out the Bruce Lipton interview. There's EFT, EMDR. There are lots of things out there that can help you reprogram, rewire, and retrain your brain that will support you in clearing your clutter. I've mentioned really briefly at the beginning of this episode the neurological response, what lights up when we have these feelings. That might be a part of what's going on for you. So investigate that a little further. See what things like EFT I've used before is really good, and find out something that can support you into rewiring your brain. Begin to build better habits. You're listening to this podcast right now. You're watching this YouTube video. You have an awareness now. So you can make a conscious choice. Doing nothing is a choice. Putting it off is a choice. Just remember that. So you can begin to build better habits. Okay, I'm going to, for my anniversary, ask my husband to spend the day with me instead of having him buy me a present. Made a conscious choice. Where else can you make those little choices to make a difference? I'm not going to buy anything not necessary while I'm decluttering my home. So that means you buy food. If you need to buy soap, you buy that, but you don't buy new clothes. You don't buy new books. You don't buy new games. You make a conscious choice to do that. And finally, get support. We all have our areas of expertise. If you're challenged in clearing your clutter and getting organized, then get support. You can hire someone like me. There are lots of options out there for you. But if you've been running around saying you're going to clear your clutter for a year or two and nothing's happened, then the take action should be to find support. Take actions from today's podcast. Spend time thinking about your childhood, adolescence, and your relationship to stuff. What is your relationship to stuff? What was your parents' relationship to stuff? How is that affecting you today? Examine what your relationship is to stuff right now. Has it changed from when you were younger? Create a plan to rethink your relationship to stuff and move forward on clearing your clutter. Begin to release stuff. Get help, watch a video, listen to a podcast, read a book. Hire someone. Next month, we will be talking about 10-minute decluttering tips for summer. Go out, clear the clutter to create the life you choose, deserve, and desire.
Ready to live a more joyful and fulfilling life? Sign up for our newsletter and receive a free copy of 10 Steps to Clearing Clutter Inside and Out. Learn more at reawakenyourbrilliance.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review Clearing the Clutter Inside and Out. See you next Tuesday at 1 p.m.